Light?
Here.
Cathedral City?
Here.
Coachella?
Here.
Desert Hot Springs?
Present.
Indian Wells?
Present.
Indio?
Present.
La Quinta?
En route.
Palm Desert?
Here.
Palm Springs?
Present.
Rancho Mirage?
Here.
Riverside County Fourth District?
Here.
Alcoyote?
Here.
We have four.
Pleasure to lead you. Pleasure to lead you.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So we'll move down to public comments. Is there anyone? Moving to executive committee director comments.
So if any committee members have comments, I've got a few after that. All right, seeing none. A couple of items. Cap and trade, as we know, we've been working on cap and trade related issues for actually years, but more recently, we've had some legislative focus. Do want to acknowledge the city of Indio received a $200,000 grant from Strategic Growth Council. I think it's in part due to our efforts in Sacramento, or at least I sure hope so. And that's only one of five projects statewide, so congratulations on that. And then AB 352, which is of course Eduardo Garcia's bill, addresses a number of cap and trade related matters, did pass out of Assembly Natural Resources unanimously on March 25th. And then a couple of items just related to this week's activities. At your desk, we showed you a notice from the South Coast Air Quality Management District. There are two meetings on Wednesday that South Coast is going to be providing some information to the public related to reclassifying us on ozone. Right now we're a severe area that can actually downgrade us to an extreme area, which sounds bad and maybe for one or two potential polluters in the Coachella Valley. It's not substantively a big thing for us. What it does allow us to do is take a couple more years to meet the standard, and that is projected to happen in the next few years. So you'll hear more about that. There was something in the Desert Sun maybe a week or two ago. And obviously, we've got a board member here, the supervisor, but the first meeting will be in Palm Desert, too, and I think at a beautiful new library in Coachella at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, right, Mayor? Lastly, again, an activity in the Coachella Valley here. Skaggs General Assembly is meeting again in the Coachella Valley in the fair city of Palm Desert over at the Marriott. They've got meetings running, I think, Wednesday through Friday. And on Wednesdays, they're really going to focus on bike and pedestrian safety. And La Quinta's own Robert Radai is one of the speakers there late in the afternoon on Wednesday. So hopefully I'll see some of you at Skaggs workshops over the next couple days as well. That's all I have for you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So moving down to consent calendar. So moved. There's a motion.
Second.
Comments, questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion so carries. Item held over from consent calendar?
Nothing there.
Nothing. So no discussion action. A, chairmanship succession for CDI.
Thank you. Members of the committee, as you know, and as the mayor from Indio pointed out at the last meeting, the November City Council elections resulted in CBAC having an acting chairman, and this has led to a couple of questions about whether CBAC should set policy on how the chair is elected. The staff report contains quite a bit of history on the subject, as well as some comparisons to some other agencies. We outlined three main options, including establishing a formal rotation and some policy considerations associated with each option. We also presented this to the Admin and Personnel Committee, which met on March 25th. The committee recommended that the election of officers should be based on a rotation that has been generally followed for the last 20 years. The officers, both chair and vice chair, should be representatives under their recommendation of the member agency rather than a specific person. So it would remain with the jurisdiction even if an individual were to lose an election or otherwise be unable to finish their elected term. If we followed this elected, automatic rotation, excuse me, there'd be little need to establish a nominating committee as outlined in the staff report, but there could be some situations that require guidance. And the admin committee recommended that they could confirm the rotation and indicate to the executive committee if any deviations were recommended. Additionally, the admin committee acknowledged that Indio's opportunity to chair CBAG was shortchanged during the current fiscal year, and as such, the committee is also recommending that Chairman Ruby remain acting chair for the current fiscal year, and that for the upcoming fiscal year, the executive committee could recommend the representative from the Agua Caliente Band of Puyi Indians serve as chair, and the representative from the City of Indio serve as vice chair. Staff is supporting the admin committee's recommendation. There's a lot of history in the staff report, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And should the executive committee follow the recommendation of the admin committee, we would return in June with some governing document wording that would need to change.
Who is on the admin and personnel committee?
Yeah, let me answer that, and Joanna or Gary could correct me if I'm wrong. It's the chair of CBAG, it's the vice chair, it's the chair of Coachella Valley Conservation Commission, and two members at large, is that right, Gary?
Yes, and then the past chair.
And then the past chair.
Who are the two members, did you say?
Two members at large, and the two members at large, Mayor Mattis and Steve Hernandez, Mayor Hernandez.
Eric, I have a question. On page two, in the middle page, you say it is likely that the organization could be chaired by someone who has no experience or knowledge of CBAG. If it was rotating by city, that could very well happen, same when someone gets elected to the council for the first time. They've not been at CBAG at all. Did you have any other discussion on that or any ideas on how to mitigate that?
I don't think the admin committee, I'll defer to Tom on.
Yeah, and this is kind of the central question. If you go in the direction of kind of an automatic rotation, you do run into that possibility, and yet it's probably an infrequent one, but it could happen, and the admin committee suggested that this automatic review just go to the admin committee for essentially a blessing and confirmation, and if there was some issue, it could be raised and brought forward to the executive committee.
I'd like to speak on that, because it did happen 4 or 5 years ago when Kathy DeRosa retired and Stan Henry stepped in as the mayor. Now, although he was not totally foreign to the CBAG committees because he had served as chief of police, but what we decided back then was that we wanted to leave it to the city to decide whether they wanted to bring forward a senior member of their council to represent them on the CBAG executive committee, or if they wanted to move forward their mayor. And in that case, they decided to move forward their mayor, Stan Henry. So if we move forward with staff's recommendation of leaving the chairmanship to the city, we leave it to the entire council to decide who they want to move forward, whether it be a freshman council member, someone who has no experience, or a senior member. And I believe it's up to the entire council to decide who they want to bring forward as their leader to represent them on the executive council. If they have the confidence in a newly elected to represent them, then that's a decision that I believe they should make. It's not for us to decide whether a new person is qualified or not qualified to represent a city. That's something that a city should make a decision on their own. And that's the discussion that we had back when Kathy DeRosa retired. And I personally still feel strongly that each city is independent of CBAG and should make the decision as to who they feel is best to represent them on the CBAG committee. So that's just what happened back then and how I feel personally.
I'd also add that a number of cities are now rotating their mayors, and in many cities there's a seniority part of that with establishing the rotation.
Are we still on questions?
I think so.
Matt?
Yes.
Just just to clarify, am I correct that staff has not made a recommendation? The personnel committee made a recommendation, but if I'm reading this correctly, staff has simply presented options. Is that correct?
Yes, your staff isn't all that wise, but this is one I didn't want to touch. So staff does not have a recommendation. We provided options, and this is a policy call by all of you.
I personally think that policy should be that staff never makes the nomination of any officer for any position, because that is exclusively an executive committee decision. And not to inflame from the past, but we have had many times here where staff has recommended who our internally elected representatives will be. And it's an extremely bad policy. It makes staff look like it's trying to control everything, which of course we know it's not. But it looks that way nonetheless. And I think the points that have been raised here should be the subject of further consideration, so that maybe we can come up with some rules that you can't break the chain because you don't like the next person who's coming into the position as of chair. And that has happened a few times in this organization.
And just to clarify, staff has never made the recommendation. The nominating committee made the recommendation.
You picked people.
Staff has never picked people, never made a recommendation, as long as I've been executive director of CVAC.
Mr. Chairman, yes. If I may, I apologize for being late. I had a higher authority that keeping me at that other thing called a boss. However, I was part of the Administrative Personnel Committee, and when we looked at the practice based on when I first came on CVAC Executive Committee, when Mayor Stan Henry was first elected, and initially Mayor Jan Harnick had retained that position, I believe Dana had brought it up at that point in time as a practice.
When she came up the second time.
Correct. And we discussed the same type of subject and ended up honoring the city rotation process, and Stan ended up becoming chair and made great chair. And when Mayor Ramos had brought this up last meeting and we took this into consideration, we fell back into that fairness factor of wanting to make sure that there was city opportunities regardless of the election and or the person. But in looking at that, you would have had a very short term had you been appointed right now to finish Indio, same with Chairman Gruby. So in all fairness, we thought, let's give him the opportunity, then Indio will get that full component. Knowing that the tribe had been part of the table and the dues for so long, but not part of the vote, felt that that was probably the least biased component of all of this, is to have him in that capacity. And whether we develop policy or not, the practice, we're looking to not change the practice and continue that process, knowing that we have rotational cities with mayors and recognizing that, I mean, I will likely never be in that chair because I came in right before that 10 or 12 years started. So until I work that way up, who knows? But nonetheless, you know, that was the reason why the Administrative Personnel Committee kind of came to this recommendation. It was not staff. In previous times, it was a nominating committee that was consisted of like the vice chair, the past chair. So it was almost, you know, we took a different approach and we're trying to establish consistent practice. So that gives you a little bit of background.
If I may, it would appear that under staff recommendation, there's two action items. One is to appoint the chair and vice chair at this time. And the second is to whether or not we establish a policy to do the rotation in the future. Is that my correct on that?
And just to clarify, there are two components to the recommendation, and it is one that's an admin personnel committee recommendation, not a staff recommendation, and then on the second one, you wouldn't be appointing them, you'd be making a recommendation to the General Assembly. which occurs at the end of June.
Well, to make it a little easier then, let's take part two first, and I'll make a motion that we recommend to the General Assembly that the representative from the Ottawa Colliette and the Kamea Indians would be the chair, and the City of Indio would be vice chair.
Second.
Motion second. Comments, questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion so carries.
And then for the second part, I would make a motion that if a policy statement is necessary, that we direct staff to come back with a policy statement, but that the policy would simply be as it has been, that the we establish the rotation continues as it has been, and the rotation goes to the jurisdiction, not to the individual. And I think it's a pretty simple thing. I don't know why we have to go much beyond that.
Yeah, option one.
Essentially, I think that's option one.
I second that.
Motion second. Comments, questions?
Could the motion be repeated, please, by somebody?
The correction is just to establish the policy. We'd have to have the policy come back and look at what that says, but in all intents and purposes.
Yeah, the staff would have to come back with the policy, but the policy essentially is what we're saying is that we're stating that the policy should be that the rotation established as it has been established would remain, and that the seat, the office goes to the jurisdiction, not to the individual. And with that, then the staff, if it's necessary for a policy statement, staff will come back with that policy statement. We'll vote on that next meeting.
So the motion is really to establish policy, because there's still some nuances within that I think are worth discussion. Okay. Once we see a draft.
All right.
My That's personal fine. Opinion, because of the district representation.
Things might seem simple, and they never quite are. But it certainly, this would codify informal policy, and we could bring that back at your next meeting for your blessing, and we can move on to the General Assembly as well.
So then would the staff please come back with something that codifies the informal policy that's been in existence?
Any other comments or questions?
I have comment about the motion. I'll boldly offer a perspective, despite the fact that most all of you at the table have more experience than I do on the executive committee. But here's a counterpoint. We'd be giving up discretion and the opportunity to exercise judgment, which exists under the current policy as it has been adhered to in the past. It's what lawyers would call common law, which is flexible. And it strikes me that that's attractive to take account of some extreme differences in experience or circumstances of a particular year. The starting point that I have is it doesn't make sense to give up an opportunity to exercise judgment and discretion unless there's some compelling reason to do so. So personally, I would be content now that we've established what's to happen for 2021. To live with that, because I don't see a problem that needs to be fixed.
Do nothing.
I'm not sure there is a problem that we're trying to fix. I think it's just trying to clarify what's been in practice for so long. And I appreciate what you said, Kathleen, but I'm just simply saying that it's the jurisdiction that makes the decisions to who represents it. First, it's the jurisdiction that becomes the chair. It's not an individual. And the jurisdiction then has the responsibility to place in that position somebody that they are comfortable with as being competent enough to hold that position. They represent the jurisdiction anyway, so they ought to well do that. So.
And that's already stated in the first sentence.
Of the admin committee's recommendation, yes.
Some more discussion for one thing in front of us.
Yeah.
I mean, just to opine a little bit, if it's working, you know, why change it? And that was our general understanding, and trying to create a little bit of guidelines on how it's been working. But frankly, we don't need to do anything if it's been working and it's just said and we fixed the issue. And at this point, do we really need to, you know, keep going on an issue that 2 years from now, there's going to be maybe a different group up here and they can sort it out then, I guess. But you know, I think generally we fixed it and Indio's back in and it's been working for the last 20 years. So that may be a solution to it. Just keep what we've been doing for the last 20 years.
Sounds like an upcoming no vote on Paul Street.
Again, it's up to the committee, and no policy is going to be perfect. And there will be times that come up, even with a new structured policy. And I can think of two or three instances right now. But there's no way to solve everything because you don't know all the circumstances moving forward.
And again, it goes back, I don't want to belabor the point, but it goes back to the situation that we had where in the jurisdiction, representation of the jurisdiction was not honored, it was the individual. And because an individual was not available, it passed to the vice chair rather than to somebody else from that jurisdiction who was represented at the time. So, I mean, there really probably is no need to have a fix other than to have an understanding in the policy that it's the jurisdiction. And if for some reason the person occupying that seat representing that jurisdiction is unable to serve, the jurisdiction should appoint somebody else to immediately assume that role. That's simple. But we don't need to do anything, and everybody understands it, but we're here because it didn't happen that way. That's why.
Yeah, and we're here because that isn't the policy today. Policy is not today that the jurisdiction determines the CVAC chair.
The practice.
The practice is a rotation, and you all determine the person is the chair. And that's typical of most organizations, whether it's SCAG or RCTC or any organization. It's very unusual for a body like this to leave it up to a member agency to decide who's chairing the body. You can establish that as practice. That is fine.
Okay. So it sounds like the direction still was suggested to bring a draft back for review, right? There's no harm in doing that.
There's a motion and a second.
Bring something back for review and we can go from there.
Since we're going to be drafting up the policy for your review, I'd like a little bit more clarification as to what you want to say.
Well, there was option one.
We're conflating two issues. I think there are two issues, and I think it would be useful to understand what you said. The first issue is the issue we were just talking about, which is whether the city council decides, because if, for example, as just happened, a member loses re-election, does the city council simply appoint someone to take that person's place and that person continues on in the role of the chair? And that's the first issue. The second issue is whether or not to have an automatic rotation or, as Councilmember Kelly was talking about, a method that involves more discretion. And that's the current practice, is that there is some discretion on automatic list of cities in sequence where each city comes up. And then there's no discretion at all as to that city becoming the chair or becoming the officer next in line. Okay? So there's two separate issues here that we should use some guidance on.
Well, what's on the table is option one, which is a sequence of rotation. And I think we need to vote on whether that's got support or not, because we're going to keep debating this. So that's what you need. You need that direction. There's the rubber hit the floor at this point. And I think we need to call for that question.
I think I'd just like someone to make a motion that's very clear about both of those points.
Well, that's what he said, option one.
Where?
Which states jurisdiction.
Which, yeah.
Which is based on jurisdiction. That's what he said.
There's other nuances when you get into five districts, four districts, two districts, that's the other.
What do you mean by districts?
Well, we've got.
County supervisor seats.
Right.
Offered, supervisor seats are a nuance here. Five board members sit at CVAG, but of course, five supervisors don't show up to CVAG meetings. It's one now, but in the last 10 years, it's been two.
Yeah, but the county only gets one chairman.
That is another clarification that can be made. In the past, that hasn't.
That fourth and fifth.
That hasn't been the case.
Well, I mean, when we talk about, if there's, okay, for example, this chart shows 1, 2, 3, 10, 12, whatever, 15, I don't care, chairmanships. We just throw them in the pot and that's how many rotate. I mean, that's a nuance that needs to be decided in the policy at this point. What's on the table is a motion and a second for option one, and we need to vote on it. That's why.
And I support that as a supervisor who's actually sitting here.
Sorry, Mandy.
So I support what's here, right in front of us.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty clear.
So I think there's been a call for the question. And, right, we have a motion and a second.
Yes.
And it's on option one. We will come back best we can with a policy that you will then ratify and go to the General Assembly. So.
Any other comments or questions? All those in favor?
You'd have to do a roll call.
It's fine. You can do it. All right.
Ready?
Yes.
Light?
Yes.
Cathedral City?
Yes.
Coachella?
Yes.
Desert Hot Springs?
Yes.
Indian Wells?
Yes.
Indio?
Yes.
Mokinta?
Aye.
Palm Desert?
No.
Palm Springs?
Yes.
Rancho Mirage?
Yes.
Riverside County Fourth District?
Aye.
Agua Caliente?
Yes. Motion so carries.
The motion carries with 11 ayes and one no.
Thank you. Next item?
Continuing on the policy debate theme. The next item that's presented to you is also a two-parter. They also follow up to your last executive committee meeting, which included the election of the SCAG Regional Council. Both during the meeting and since, several of our members have commented on the confusion surrounding the process. Palm Desert Councilwoman Jan Harnick, who serves on SCAG's Regional Council, pointed out these issues when the Regional Council met on March 7th. And at SCAG's suggestion, CBEC staff sent a letter to asking the Bylaws and Resolutions Committee of SCAG to consider clarifying their process. As is noted in the staff report, CBEC staff has suggested that possibly providing some regional flexibility would encourage participation in regional council elections while maintaining fairness across large geographic regions like ours. For example, this policy could allow CVAG or other sub-regional organizations within SCAG to coordinate regional council votes by having the election occur at each individual city council meeting and then compiling the tally together. This idea was discussed by their Bylaws and Resolutions Committee on March 21st. SCAG staff was open to revising the district election procedures, and committee members also suggested and expressed interest in ways that would make elections more accessible, particularly utilizing teleconferencing. However, committee members suggested that both CVAG and others get additional input from our jurisdictions before they consider a change, because this would apply to all of SCAG. In addition to getting feedback on this idea, CVAG staff is recommending we set a policy as it pertains to the appointments of the SCAG policy committees. There are three major policy committees: the Transportation Committee, the Energy and Environment Committee, and the Community Economic and Human Development Committee. Traditionally, we've not seen widespread interest in serving on SCAG policy committees, in large part because of the time commitment that it takes to travel to LA. But by working under this assumption, we've led to long time spans without a call for candidates. So SCAG defers to the respective subregions to decide how it makes appointments and has no set policy on how this needs to be done. CVAG staff is recommending that a suggestion, based on some conversations with SCAG legal counsel, that a two-year term would be appropriate approach because it mirrors the regional council terms. And it will also be up to the subregion to determine a term limit if appropriate. If the two-year term is approved by the executive committee, it would be applied, we suggest that it would be applied to the two policy committee appointments that you made at the last executive committee meeting, and in order to keep all the policy committees roughly on the same schedule, we would issue a call for candidates and see what interest there is for the transportation committee. That could be done as soon as June 3rd. The recommendation is before you, and I'm happy to address any questions.
Comments, questions? So the recommendations?
I so moved.
What's the motion?
Could I be clear about what's being moved, because of the issue of possible term limits came up for the committee assignments, and I did not hear that as part of staff's recommendation. If, since we have had difficulty recruiting people to serve on the committees, given that they need to travel to downtown LA once a month, it would strike me as odd to impose term limits when we're already struggling to recruit people to fill those positions. So am I correct that term limits was floated as question, but it's not part of the recommendation?
The recommendation is to set a term, because currently these policy committees don't have a term. So that would be the recommendation, certainly if it's up to the executive committee.
Without limits, so it could, they could continue on if they're so willing.
It would just provide the executive committee to review it and see what other interests there might be.
Yes.
I support the recommendation. I guess there's a motion. Yes, I need a second.
I'll second.
Motion, second. Question?
So the question is, we're just going to discuss the policy change. This isn't making any change, right? We're going to discuss it with city councils?
Two parts. One, SCAG expressed interest in getting broader interest. So
the city councils?
Yeah, so on the first part, on the regional flexibility for the regional council, the actual election process, it would be our intent to share this information with cities, and if anybody had any additional feedback, we'd certainly forward that on to SCAG. Separately, we're also recommending that there be a term for the policy, the three policy
committees. I'm trying to understand the policy change for the broader participation. So what you're asking us is permission to go to the city councils and ask them their opinion on the voting process for the regional council elections.
Yes.
That's what you're asking us.
Yes, as was demonstrated during the last meeting, there was some confusion on how do you seek participation and then the voting process. So we are asking SCAG to review regional, give us more regional flexibility, not just us, but other sub-regions. Frankly, when you think about the drive to Blythe, for example, is it reasonable to expect all the Blythe council members to travel to Palm Desert for a vote? Are there other ways that we can encourage participation?
Thank you.
They need to, they will.
Any other comments or questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion so carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item C, Coachella Valley Homelessness Collaborative. But I think Savvy's going to be on this.
Your chairman of your homeless committee is here, Savvy Jonathan, so it saves me from doing a staff report.
Thank you, Chairman. As I heard, I'm essentially tasked with giving the staff report this afternoon, so I do expect a little something extra in my paycheck, Tom. And the other good news is that we're not going to talk about rules and policies. I think we've had enough of that. It's good to see all of you here. What a distinguished gathering, indeed. Have some good news to share with you. And you've seen, I'm going to cover where we're going with homelessness in a second, but I want to touch on the funding because there's an update to what is in your staff report. At this point in time, and there may be more, but at this point in time, in addition to the funding commitments that you see in your report, we have received approval from the tribe, and I thank you, Chairman, for that continuing participation. With the matching, that brings us up to just under $1.6 million, which is amazing. of note, and that I want to personally thank, is the city of Rancho Mirage, which this year has decided to participate in the CDAG effort, and that's very, very much appreciated. And the county of Riverside, which we were hoping for some continuing funding. I don't think any of us expected the funding to be at the same level as the prior year of $360,000. And thank you, Supervisor, for pushing that ball forward. Appreciate it very, very much.
Thank you.
And then my calling out gratitude to individual entities would not be complete without recognizing the Desert Healthcare District once again, because it is, in fact, their matching program that has encouraged many cities to step up, because when they commit to $100,000, it's $200,000 into the CVAC pod for undertaking this regional holistic approach. So thank you, and essentially, thank you to the Desert Healthcare District. They've been amazing. Speaking of which, where are we going with homelessness? I think you're aware that the Desert Healthcare District commissioned Barbara Poppy to analyze our situation, to see what's being done in the Coachella Valley, and to make recommendations. The number one recommendation in her report was to form a valley-wide collaborative, essentially taking the current efforts, which is CV Housing First, administered via CBAG, via the Homelessness Committee, and to take that to a whole new level. After several meetings with the Homelessness Committee, with Desert Healthcare District, and other stakeholders, we have gained a better understanding of what that will look like, and we have embraced that recommendation. Once again, thanks to our supervisor, there's been an offer to make Greg Rodriguez available. If you don't know Greg, he's here in the audience, and after being deeply immersed in homelessness these last few years, I can tell you that I know very few people that have a more in-depth understanding and frankly better connections, networks of individuals that are important to network with, than Greg Rodriguez. The recommendation is that we accept the CDAC Executive Committee, which has already been approved by the Homelessness Committee, but we accept the offer to provide 75% of Greg's time specifically to the transition of the current program to the recommended collaborative. And the cost of that would be $90,000 out of the CVAC Homelessness Committee funds. The other 25% would actually, of Greg's time, would actually be still spent on homelessness related issues. The idea in terms of having Greg do this is to transition us. While we've all embraced the concept of a collaborative, what that is exactly has yet to be defined. And that is intentional, because that is a process. Defining what that collaborative will look like, how it will function, what it will do, who the members will be, and so on and so forth, is something that requires thoughtful consideration. That is what Greg will be tasked with. I think that kind of covers that. This item. Are there questions? Okay, and I'll turn it back over to you, Chairman.
Thank you. So we do have a recommendation?
Move.
Second. Motion to approve. Second. Comments, questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against? Thank you. Motion's okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Do you need me to cover the next item, or you got that?
It's up to you, Chairman.
Either please.
Maybe I'll start.
Since I'm not going to get that extra payment in my paycheck, so I'm going to offer it to you. Good to see all of you. Thank you.
Thanks, Zoe. So the second item related to homelessness, Assemblyman Chad Mays, I made a couple phone calls a week or two ago. Mayor Moon is to a couple of your colleagues that sit on the homeless task force in the city of Palm Springs, and your city manager and me. And Assemblyman Chad Mays had an offer that we couldn't pass up. In fact, it was an offer to him that we couldn't pass up. The governor apparently approached Mr. Mays and suggested that there be a line item in the governor's budget for Chad's district and the Coachella Valley. And the Assemblyman contacted us to talk about what that could be. We worked with Greg Rodriguez on an approach that involved a $10 million ask, $7 million for hard cost, capital cost, $3 million for soft cost, program cost, and really broadened it to not just, of course, Chad May's district, but the entire Coachella Valley. And Chad and Eduardo Garcia co-signed a letter that went to the governor's office, and we're hopeful that that gets into the budget. We have sent, because of the timing on this, we did send out notices to all of you asking for support letters to go into the governor's office. Many of you did so. This is your official chance to give me authority to have the chairman sign one as well, and off it will go. Greg, did I forget anything? Savvy? Did I do okay on the staff report?
Done good.
Thank you.
Motion to approve.
Tom, I got a question, please. Palo Verde Valley, what about Palo Verde Valley?
I think the support letter would get, on the program cost would allow us to use some of that funding that Palo Verde Valley as well. It is a part of Eduardo Garcia's district, so I think that would give us flexibility.
Well, could it be included in this, just not saying Coachella Valley, also Palo Verde Valley?
I think that's a great idea. Greg, do you see any problem doing that? And so maybe the staff, the maker of the motion in the second?
As amended to include Palo Verde areas.
Thank you.
Did you have a question? So we have the motion second?
We need a second.
Any other comments or questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion so carries. Thank you.
The only thing I would add is going back to C. As Greg works on the collaborative, that we also include the Palo Verde Valley in that discussion and that effort as well.
Thank you. I'd like to make a comment at this time, but I don't know if you guys are aware, I know Manny Perez very well, and been very helpful. We've had a situation the past month that the Border Patrol has been dumping off people in Blythe. We did not know what happened till that day, and so we had to get on board. We contacted the county, and the county was very helpful in working with us to go through this situation, and it's still happening today. We probably already had 500 people come through Blythe that they come from the Yuma sector. The Border Patrol dumps them off.
Yuma?
Yes, dumps them off right at the bus station, and that's it. No food, no nothing. So, and
but I will say though, with that, I know we have an agenda here, but county staff definitely jumped on, and I just want to let everyone know that from the Department of Public Social Services to our healthcare efforts to RUHS to behavioral health, our sheriff, probation, working with the city of Blythe, working with the city of Coachella, because they're actually being transported from Blythe to Coachella. And then from there being transported to San Bernardino to get on a bus or to Ontario to get on a plane to get to their families or to their sponsors until they have their court date. And so it's happening every single day. It caught everybody by surprise, including the county. We found out about it, I think, maybe a couple hours before it actually happened, the very first go around. It's been going on every single day now. I'm not sure about Sundays, but it's been going on mostly every single day. And you're right, we're over 500 people already that we've been working with to make sure that they get to a safe place. And so we also requested funding from the governor. As a result of that, there was a newspaper article that there will be funding going to Catholic Charities, the amount of $520,000 to help support our efforts, because quite frankly, our city is going to do so much, the county is going to do so much, and that's just another area, obviously, of concern for all of us. But at the end of the day, it's important as a county, and I think for all of us here, to step up in a manner in which we need to be humanitarian about this, and as well ensure the public safety of these individuals. So just want to just add to Joe DeConnick's words.
Thank you, Manuel. And the only reason I brought it up is because of the homeless situation.
Sure.
You know, this leads to more homeless and other issues. And it's like he said, when we got, actually, they showed up, and we got a phone call from a police officer. And this is how it all got started, seeing these people getting, so that's when we looked into it. And at least now we get a little notification, maybe a few hours ahead, or maybe the day before, letting us know they're going to dump another bunch out. So it's been quite a situation.
Just to elaborate on Coachella, because ultimately that's where they're going to take advantage of the different charities as well as the churches that have been assisting. We haven't seen any increase in homeless at all. In fact, you know, usually folks are there for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days max, and they're on their way. But so we're good to go. We just want to thank all the nonprofits who have contributed and are part of this. And I don't want to forget the fact that the reason folks are being, you know, dropped off is because there's due process of law. And so these folks that are being dropped off and have been dropped off by immigration folks, they're entitled to due process of law, and they have their hearing dates, and they will be going through the due process system. So as of now, there have been no issues. So.
Thank you. Moving on to the next item, item B.
And Mark Magano will give the staff report, but I probably could have done the same thing I did with our chair of our homeless committee and asked Mayor Mattis to give the staff report. So I suspect he's talked to all of you about this item, and his efforts really led to Martin's staff report. So
Mark's way too much more intelligent than I am.
Good afternoon, everyone. This item for you is dealing with Western Utah Valley Wilson and flooding events that we recently experienced. As you know, on Valentine's Day, our roadways were tested with the major flooding events that we've had in this valley, and stormwater filled the flood control channels, and they blocked roads and made them impassable. There was travelers were just faced with detours all over this valley, especially in the western end of the valley. Palm Springs issued a shelter-in-place emergency warning, and Palm Springs University District also had closed schools early that day. But it may happen even worse, trying to get parents to pick up their children. Public safety crews, you know, they worked diligently to clean up the aftermath, but as you know, there still remained a lot of roadways that were closed for days and sometimes even weeks. Flooding was particularly widespread in the Western Utah Valley, as I mentioned, and up in it affected the cities of Desert Hot Springs, Cathedral City, Palm Springs, and areas in the county. Little Morongo Road in the Gilton area, that was causes flooding to create trouble for traffic to get out of Desert Hot Springs. Indian Canyon Drive, that long stretch between Vista Chino and the interstate gets flooded. As you know, North Indian Canyon Drive is the connector down to Desert Regional Medical Center, which has the only trauma center here in the valley. It also connects the cities up in the higher desert up in the Yucca Valley, those cities that also use that roadway. Geometry Trail also gets flooded out between I-10 and Vista Chino. We had recently flooded on Barter Road, get flooded out as well. Down in Vista Chino, as you cross the wash, also gets flooded, low water crossing there. And the flooding along Dillon to connect to Palm Drive and Mountain View. This is a picture of the flooding that has just happened recently, and you get an idea of how devastating it can be to our roadway infrastructure and then just to the region in general and getting people to move around. Another factor is also that we face is blow sand in this valley. Those recent events closed, especially in the Canyon and Geometry, where the city has to, Palm Springs consistently has to send out crews to remove the sand within a matter of hours to keep these roadways open. And it just makes it difficult to travel with the dust that fills the air. Most recently, you know, this was an event that happened in March, but just over the last month, I think Indian Canyon Road has been closed several times. And we feel the impact of that. The CPAC Executive Committee, you guys have made some good investments in our regional projects, and we all know that there's other projects that are coming online, but it doesn't seem to be enough. These projects, while they're on the horizon and we're doing great things, there's high costs that are associated with these projects. And in the case of, for example, Palm Springs, Indian Canyon Drive is projected to cost about $250 million to put a low-water crossing on this roadway. Well, even if you consider outside funding, state and federal funding, the cost to the local jurisdictions and CBAC is still astronomical. And that's why in many cases, some of these projects don't move forward as fast as they should. So we reached out to the local cities, and we reached out to Riverside County to discuss possible solutions and how we could create some kind of solutions that, or find some solutions that where we could implement some projects that would be less costly and more affordable, as opposed to going the other route of the projects that we know for sure have not been able to be built into the funding. So this, our recommendation, that concludes my staff report. The recommendation is to authorize the executive director to release some request for proposals, develop a plan to provide near-term solutions to impacts affecting the Los Angeles area and Western Patchogue Valley. This was presented to the Transportation Committee on the April 8th meeting, and they concurred. So any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Comments, questions, please?
Just some quick comments. I mean, Desert Hot Springs, I was born and raised there in the 70s. The roads used to wash out. Schools would be closed because school buses couldn't get over there. I spent 20 years as a volunteer firefighter. It was times when we just had to fly people out of there because there just was no roadways anymore. Lisa Middleton sits on transportation with me on RCTC and transportation here. We kind of started talking about this, and there's got to be more inexpensive ways to figure out than $500 million in bridges built on Gene Autry, Indian Canyon, other Faroes and Desert Hot Springs. I mean, we spent $1 billion on the 91 interchange or 91 expansion, and it took years to do that. I can't see that we're going to get a lot of support on $500 million to build these large overpasses. So, and I can't imagine what Palm Springs spends just in public works clearing these off. Plus, we have built this brand new interchange on Palm and Gene Autry, and you can't even use one of the lanes because of the blow sands all over it. So there's got to be inexpensive, or at least a little more inexpensive ways to make this work. And I brought this to Tom and Martin's attention recently, and they said, let's talk about this and study this again and find ways to do this. So there's a lot of options out there for the future. And then lastly, I have a new council member that's he has a dog with a bone right now, and he's about getting some emergency access to the trauma centers. And this is important. We have one trauma center here in the valley, and the fastest route from the freeway from the cities on the north side county is Indian Canyon. And I can't say it's contributed to deaths, but I know people that have had to have CPR done on them on the way to the hospital and have to take a 45-minute route because a 20-minute or 15-minute or 10-minute route is just not available. So I think we can't leave it all on Palm Springs' shoulders when it comes to these two main thoroughfares into their city. We need to take it on as a region and try to find some solutions.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's important that we balance the needs of what's being proposed. If you look at the infrastructure of the Coachella Valley, I think it acted like it was designed to do. And the next day it was pretty dry, and things have, some of back to normal, and some occasions we needed to, you know, clean out the sand and get those roads back. But I think what's important is that we address that emergency concern, that if, you know, there's not two ways of access to emergency, to an emergency area, then we really address that. But in terms of, you know, we build a road in the low sand area, we're gonna get low sand. And so that's, we left the road, we're probably gonna get low sand there too. And I think it's more of a maintenance cost that we gotta look at than overall, you know, huge investment in very, very expensive infrastructure. And having said that though, if we do put a lot of infrastructure, or there is a big effort to address what's going on in the West, we need to balance it with the projects that need to happen in the East with respect to the Measure A. Because I mean, how are we gonna pay for something like this? It's probably gonna be Measure A or Thompson. There's still a lot of projects East that need to be built as well. So our approach just needs to be balanced because, you know, there's emergency situations out East as well, and there's just general infrastructure needs as well that need to, you know, that still need to get built. So I think that we'd like to see a balanced approach out of this valley.
And if I may say, part of the problem in Palm Springs with all the sand going on Indian Canyon, and Marcus Forrest, the engineer, has been keeping us up to speed on that, is because the recent floods, which were the biggest floods since 1943, they've washed down hundreds of tons, I think it was, thousands of tons of very, very fine sand. And that sand is being picked up by the winds and blown out onto the highway, and that's why we haven't had these severe problems in the past. The sand is just so fine that the wind just picks it up and blows it. So it's going to be, take a while. Do we have any estimates on how long this situation's going to?
Till it all blows away.
Yeah, that's what he tells us, and we don't know how long that'll be. But this is a unique situation. It's only the first time in 70 years that we've had this kind of type of rain. But I think probably looking at an overall study to see throughout the entire East and West what needs to be done and prioritize some of them is probably a good idea. But the cost is going to be absolutely prohibitive for the whole thing. But there may be some lower cost items that could be done that could have a larger impact.
Yeah, Doc, maybe picking up on that theme, just to put things into perspective, and Mr. Mattis already did so, the $500 million for those low water crossings are already in our capital improvement project. That's $500 million. Those two projects are the largest two projects in our TPPS, our capital improvement program. So this is really about cost savings and doing something quickly and efficiently and making it easier to afford projects in Eastern Coachella Valley, Central Coachella Valley, and everywhere. We need to find a more cost-effective way to achieve the objectives. And this study is a small financial commitment. You'll get the price tag once we get the proposals back. It'll be a small financial commitment. With the recommendations, that'll be another conversation. How do we pay for those recommendations? But it sure is not going to be a $500 million recommendation coming forward.
Move to approve.
There's a motion.
Second.
Comments, questions? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion so carries. Thank you. Next item, F.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, Executive Committee members. We have for this item the North Indian Canyon Drive that we've just been talking about. This time it's the widening project that started, if you look, this is just north of the 10. And it goes basically from Dillon Road to the on-ramps and off-ramps of the 10 interstate. This project started in the original agreement back in 2016, and it was only with the City of Palm Springs and the County of Riverside. And the reason for that was that the City of Palm Springs had under contract already a very good price on paving, asphalt paving. And so they contributed as phase one of this project approximately $300,000 worth of that paving. And they needed to do it right away. At the same time, the county graciously took the lead on this project and began its design. And in that agreement, it stipulated that there would be a sub-agreement to pull Desert Hot Springs in and divvy up the prices once there was a solid estimate. That solid estimate has been elusive as amendment number two. Now, as we added a signalized intersection with amendment number one, and now the design has been complete, and I believe it's been put out to bid, we now have a pretty good focus on the cost. The costs now exceed the costs that we had originally envisioned, and so we decided that instead of having a sub-agreement, it would be much simpler at this point, just have this be another amendment to the overall agreement. And so this amendment pulls in Desert Hot Springs, assigns the proportional share to Desert Hot Springs, and raises the total price of the project. And if I go back, just so you can see, it is a complex project. You have the City of Desert Hot Springs, you have the City of Palm Springs, and you have Riverside County all engaged in this project. And it's not a percentage base, it's based on what the improvements are and where they're at. So what we've recommended is that we approve this with a not to exceed amount for the region of $3,591,000, and then pulling Desert Hot Springs with their regional share, and with the county with their regional share, Palm Springs with their regional share. Any questions?
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Motion second, comments, questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion so carries.
The information is provided. For your information, your next executive committee meeting is, of course, June 3rd, and then General Assembly at the end of the month.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, on the informational items, if I could reference item number F, which is AB 854, the Imperial Irrigation District and Retail Electric Service. At the Energy and Environmental Committee meeting, we had both representatives from Templeton May's office as well as from IID providing education on the proposed legislation. And there was no action at that time. It was an informational item only. However, based on some discussion, much discussion by the committee members, there was some interest in moving the proposal forward to actually submit a letter of support for AB 854, knowing that that would have to start at E&E and then come to the CBED Executive Committee. I thought that perhaps we might entertain some discussion on sense of support and or comment regarding this particular item.
So since that time, Council Member Megan Asikovina and myself were in Sacramento testifying.
In support?
In support for Assembly Member Chad Mays, and there was an article in the Desert Sun just this past week. The Committee on Local Government passed the bill to the Committee on Appropriations.
5-2.
Right, 5-2. So the letter of support will be helpful. It probably will sit in the Committee for Appropriations for some time. The Committee on Local Government basically said to Imperial Irrigation District they were appalled at their arrogance and suggested that they take this time to think about how they can work with Assembly Member Chad Mays to find a way to give Coachella Valley representation so that the voters were not disenfranchised. However, I don't think the board member that was there represented Imperial Irrigation really wanted to, so we'll just see how that works. But a letter of support would be helpful. They have there about 20 representatives representing the labor unions and some contracting unions and some business groups in opposition to the bill. And it was just us two and one lobbyist for the city, Springer City.
We were interviewing the city manager that day.
So it was us three against 20 people, but the committee stood behind us. So
good.
That was a successful.
Thank you for that.
That was a successful.
So AB plans on putting that on the agenda moving forward, so we'll eventually get to this group as well.
Absolutely, there would have been more there. We couldn't get into the chamber, so we were up there. We talked to.
Oh, that's right. You were there for LEAP, but the lobbyist for your city was very, very helpful.
Yeah, it goes on. Yeah. Is that all for that item? Item H? Caltrans, I guess, was an audit. We have an audit committee within CBED. Has the audit committee reviewed this audit?
Yes, they have.
They have.
Yes.
Yeah, and my apologies. We didn't note that in the staff report. Not only did the audit committee review it, it was also briefly discussed at the admin committee as well.
Yeah.